Case number 20-5284, the United States of America v. Mark Gold. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Travis Allen Rossman for the appellant.
Mr. Rossman, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Travis Rossman and I represent appellant Mark Gold. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The first issue is whether a FaceTime call constitutes a visual depiction within the meaning of guidelines section 2G1.3C1, such as to support the application of the cross-reference to 2G2.1. This appears to be an issue of first impression, and appellant's position is that a FaceTime call does not constitute a visual depiction because it does not leave any permanent record or permanent recording. Now, the term visual depiction in section 2G1.3C1 is not defined in the guidelines or anywhere else. It is not.
Well, Mr. Rossman, let me just ask you this on that basic definition. And you say that it's not defined and it's not a visual depiction because it's not permanent. Would the presentation of a community play or even a Broadway theater play be a visual depiction since at the end of that performance, it's gone?
Well, our position would be that it would not be a visual depiction. It would be a live performance. If it were videoed and broadcast to people in other places, it would be a live transmission, but not a visual depiction because there is no permanent recording.
What, and so permanency is the key to the definition as far as you're concerned.
That is our position, yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Judge Murphy, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to follow up. It seems to me that your argument really does, it's very difficult for me to understand how that hypothetical from Judge Donald would not fall within the plain meaning of visual depiction. It's visual and it's a depiction. Your argument really hinges, it seems to me, on the reading the tea leaves into the other commentary where it has that visual depiction or live transmission. But is there an argument setting aside that other guidelines provision that just the plain meaning of visual depiction would exclude this type of conduct?
Yes. So the government argued that depiction, visual depiction means a representation of something, and that's been the plain meaning going back to 1688. We addressed the etymology of the word depiction and traced it back to its Latin root to mean painting. The fundamental Latin root of the word depiction comes from the term painting or to paint. And that implies permanency. Now, it does not mean permanency for all time. It does not mean that something can never be destroyed, right? So a painting could be destroyed. All copies of a video recording could be lost. But there must be some recording or permanent record of something to constitute a visual depiction.
That, so do you think that it wouldn't matter if it said any visual depiction instead of visual depiction? Do you think it would have been broad enough at that point to cover the conduct here?
Well, there's a case from the Fifth Circuit holding that under the plain error standard of review in the context of a statute and the statutory definition of 2256. But I don't think it would be just looking at the guidelines. And there's an important distinction to make. The child pornography statutes are supposed to be a comprehensive regulatory scheme from Congress to protect children from sexual abuse and child pornography. They're supposed to encompass all of that conduct. But we're asking a different question when we get into the guidelines. And that question is, which guidelines provision most accurately captures or reflects the offense conduct? So 2G1.3 covers child exploitation. 2G2.1 covers production of child pornography. So if we're going to go via a cross-reference from 2G1.3 to 2G2.1, the conduct needs to look more like production of child pornography than it does child exploitation.
So Mr. Rossman, I'm still hung up on this definitional thing. And This may not make any sense because I don't know that much about social media, but let's say, going back to this visual depiction, somebody captured this for Instagram, for example. And as I understand it, Instagram is not permanent. It is for a fixed period of time. So that would not satisfy visual depiction because it would not last longer than this defined period of time. Is that right?
So there's a question of what quantum of permanency do you need to get from the threshold? I don't think that necessarily needs to be reached by the court today. It's not necessarily the issue, right? The FaceTime call here never occurred. It just didn't happen. So does it need to be recorded for something that can last permanently or that lasts 10 seconds and then gets deleted like some social media platforms? Mm-hmm. I think that's an important question. It's not necessarily the question today, but I would just suggest there needs to be some representation of it that lasts beyond the moment. And here, there was nothing in the record to indicate that that was the intent with these FaceTime calls. So not only does the plain meaning and the Latin root of depiction support the position, also the structure of the guidelines and the need to fit into the offense conduct that most closely resembles it, that supports it, but also the structure of the guidelines like we were talking about. So the commission tied some of the terms in the guidelines to statutory definitions. We see that in 2G1.3. There's an example, the term sexually explicit conduct is tied to the statutory definition of the the statute. But that didn't occur with visual depiction. We see other terms from other guidelines tied to statutory definitions. So in 2G2.1, the term material is tied to the statutory definition in 2256. And again, we don't have that here. And I would suggest that that omission is intentional and it's structural and it should be given effect. Because again, a live transmission, a one-time broadcast, looks more like sexual exploitation than it does producing child pornography.
Can I ask you one potential? I thought your best argument was the fact that this nearby guideline does include live transmit or live visual depiction, which itself suggests that visual depiction can have a meaning of live, and that, you know, the expression of one thing is the exclusion of another has some sway here, and it's not in this provision. But is there anything to be made of the verbs? The verb here is producing a visual depiction, and then the verb in that live visual depiction is transmitting. And so maybe what they were getting at was somebody who's not itself creating the image, but also just passing it along, just a channel, which could suggest that still has some meaning, even under your interpretation. But here it would still be producing a visual depiction because it would be the FaceTime itself would be the production.
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead and respond to his question.
So if I understand the question correctly, 2G1.3 talks about producing a visual depiction. And I think if you produce something, that means it's meant to last. That means it's not a transitory live transmission that's sent out only once, right? Movies are produced, but I don't know that instant live stream social media feeds are produced within the same meaning. So I think production implies permanency, and creation is really not that much different than, or transmission is really not that much different than production.
The question I have is, I have a sort of overarching problem. You've raised and done a good job on it for your client of raising some very interesting issues that make a good law school exam. But where I'm puzzled is I go to your brief and you end it by saying, because resolution of these issues would likely invoke additional fact-finding, remand to the district court for finding in the first instance would be the appropriate remedy. And first of all, it seems to me like these are more legal issues than fact issues, but it raises the further question of, I'm not sure what you expect to get from your relief when you get it. Do you back up to just the statute, which says 10 years to life? Sometimes these sentencing cases strike me as, be careful what you wish for when you want something to go back to the district court for sentencing. So somewhere along the line, you can stay with your argument somewhere along the line if you could address that.
Right. So the district court applied the enhancement for two reasons. The district court said that someone on the receiving end could record it without the knowledge of the live transmitter, and also talked about the commonly understood definition of key terms. The government raised an alternative basis to affirm, which was the conversations after the talk about FaceTime calls of potentially filming the anticipated sexual encounter. And so the reason to send it back for additional fact-finding is if the court finds that that is an alternative basis to affirm or is inclined to view it as such, the remedy would be to send it back to the district court for certain findings. For instance, the district court never clearly defined the scope of the relevant conduct. The district court did not address those communications, and there could be other issues that the defendant could raise to rebut that, such as potentially some sort of sentencing factor manipulation or something of that sort. So if the court is inclined to consider those, then we would ask for remand for additional fact finding, if that answers your question.
Okay. Well, yes and no, because picking alternative legal theories, to me, doesn't meet the definition of fact finding. But it's a little difficult for me to see what the bottom line here is going to be. I guess one of the questions is, if this goes back, does it reopen the whole sentencing process, which would include the benefits, not the acceptance of responsibility benefit, but the other benefits that the defendant received in this proceeding.
Right, so 2G1.3C only applies if it's to the detriment of the defendant. And we think under an alternative guidelines calculation, if it goes back without the cross-reference, then his guidelines range could be as low as the statutory minimum. And I see that concludes my time, unless the court has any additional questions.
Well, I do want you, sir, to take just a moment and talk about this language, offering or seeking by notice or ad, because you raised that in your brief too. You assert that the cross-reference requires would have required Mr. Gould to have been the person to place the ad. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that and under the theories of the standards of statutory construction too.
Yes, so if visual depiction or seeking by notice or advertisement does not apply, then the cross-reference does not apply. Seeking by notice or advertisement, the first argument would be the broad language, if the offense involved. So the government argued that if the offense involved seeking by notice or advertisement, then that is sufficient. And our argument there is that the placement of the advertisement did not constitute relevant conduct because it occurred before Gould responded and before the offense conduct began. And you'll see in the factual basis for the plea, the factual basis begins with him responding to that advertisement.
So you're really saying that it's because he didn't place the ad, because any ad that a person goes to is going to be placed before they take the action of looking at it. That's by nature of advertising. So you're really just saying because he didn't place the ad, it's not relevant conduct for him.
Right. And that takes to the next point, which was the basis of the district court to apply it, was that he was seeking when he responded to the ad. But seeking by notice or advertisement does not include responding to the notice or advertisement. It's the posting of the notice or advertisement.
Well, but why wouldn't it include searching an advertisement if one is seeking to find the best price for a refrigerator? and they're looking at certain advertisements, they're still seeking or searching, aren't they?
Well, the seeking is limited to by notice or advertisement. And under the plain language of that, if you seek something by notice or advertisement, that would call for posting a notice or advertisement. You may be seeking when you respond to an advertisement, but you're not seeking by notice or advertisement.
Okay.
And there was an analogy before the district court about the truck. If you have a truck for sale, or if you're wanting to buy a truck, if you post an ad that says, I want a truck, that's seeking by notice or advertisement. But if you respond to an existing ad and say, hey, I have a truck for sale, that is not seeking by notice or advertisement, that is responding.
Are there any further questions, Judge Guy, of Mr. Rossman?
No.
Judge Murphy? All right. Yep. Mr. McLaurin, then we're ready to hear from you. You'll have your 3 minutes rebuttal, Mr. Rossman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court. My name is Luke McLaurin, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. The district court's application of the cross-reference in this case should be affirmed because the undisputed facts show that Mr. Gold sought to have an 8-year-old girl engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing a visual depiction of that conduct. Now, Mr. Gold contends that this case does not involve visual depictions or seeking by notice, but his arguments don't square with the plain meaning of either of those terms. A live video transmission of sexually explicit conduct is commonly understood to be a visual depiction of such conduct. And sending an email offering to pay money or provide child pornography in exchange for sexually explicit FaceTime sessions with a minor counts as seeking such sessions by notice. Now, I'd like to begin with the visual depiction issue and explain why the FaceTime sessions that Mr. Gold sought in this case qualify as visual depictions. Mr. Gold contends that the term visual depiction is limited to images or recordings that have some form of permanence to them. But that requirement of permanence is not consistent with the plain meaning of either visual or depiction. The common understanding of a depiction is something that a representation of someone or something. And the term visual simply means that that representation must be one that can be perceived by sight. Live video transmissions easily satisfy that definition.
What do you? I would agree that it falls within the ordinary meaning if all we had to go on was visual depiction. But there is another guideline that's right next door that seems to differentiate producing a visual depiction from transmitting a live visual depiction, suggesting that producing a visual depiction should somehow be different from transmitting a live visual depiction. Under your view, isn't that latter phrase and that other guideline completely superfluous? What was Congress thinking when they, or I guess the commission thinking, when they amended that guideline to include the phrase live visual depiction, but refused to amend this guideline in the same way?
It appears that there's two questions there, and I want to answer each one of them in turn. So with regard to would our reading render that extra language in 2G2.2 superfluous, I don't think so for the very reason that you previously suggested, Judge Murphy. There is the possibility of a situation, there's a different verb that's used, production of a visual depiction versus transmitting a live visual depiction. And there is a possibility that somebody could be seeking to have a minor, that could be seeking to be involved in the transmission of a live visual depiction without actually being one that's involved in the production, right? They could be seeking to set up an arrangement where they're connecting a willing abuser of a child with a willing participant in a FaceTime session, and they're trying to set up that exchange. So I think there is some work that still could be done by the words of that guideline. As to why the guideline was amended, we know that when we look to Amendment 733 and the reasons for the amendment, and what the Sentencing Commission was trying to do was essentially track what Congress had done with the child pornography statutes. And I think the reason why only 2G2.2 was amended is because 2G2.1 and 2G2.2 are the child pornography guidelines. And in fact, that's what the reason for the amendment says, is that we're trying to amend the child pornography guidelines to reflect what Congress has provided. It was probably simply an oversight on the part of the Sentencing Commission in not realizing that there were other cross-references that also bring people to these guidelines, but they were specifically trying to address the child pornography guidelines. And what they were trying to do is follow what Congress had done. And so I think it's really important to look at what did Congress do with the Protect Act? What was it trying to do? And what it was trying to do was simply clarify the statute. It wasn't trying to change the statute. It was simply trying to clarify that this statute, that this term visual depiction in these statutes is broad. It is a broad term, and we mean it to be a broad term. We mean it to apply to all kinds of visual depictions, including the ones that have become more prevalent because of new technologies. I would note that this language that is added in 2G 2.2 is identical to language that Congress itself added to the offense listed in 2251A. And the Nichols Court in the Fifth Circuit expressly considered that and said just because Congress added that language didn't mean that they were trying to suggest that a live visual depiction is something different than a regular visual depiction, that the term visual depiction is narrower and does not include live transmissions. They were simply trying to do is clarify the statute. They wanted to make doubly sure that these new technologies, which were being used much more frequently, were actually covered by the statute.
And why would they say transmit a live? Why wouldn't they cover transmitting of a recorded visual depiction? Is there a reason why they put live there? I would think that an email exchange of child pornography, that would fall within the plain meaning of transmit a visual depiction, but it would fall outside this provision if it was recorded.
I'm not sure that I know the answer as to why Congress wanted to emphasize live with regard to the transmitting part of this, but I do think it would be strange to interpret the congressional act that added this language as suggesting that visual depiction is limited to permanent recordings, when in the same act, they also amended the definition of visual depiction to clarify that it applies to things whether or not stored in a permanent format. So I think you're right, Judge Murphy, that there is an aspect of this linguistic structure, particularly with the or, that seems to suggest that, you know, we have an either or situation here. But we can't consider that language in a vacuum. We have to consider it in light of the whole statutory scheme that Congress was enacting. And in that statutory scheme, they also amended the definition of visual depiction to make it very clear that it applies to things that are not simply, that are not, whether or not they are stored in a permanent format. And so I think we have to read all the, when you look at all those clues together, it doesn't get us to the point where that legislative history would have to do what it would need to do with regard to statutory interpretation for 2G1.3. Because our normal rules are we start with the plain language, and we follow where the plain language leads us. Unless there is some sort of very clear indication that we are given that Congress or the Sentencing Commission meant for that plain language to mean something completely different, we follow where the plain language leads us. And here, yes, there are other things. There's this other guideline, there's this other statute. But when you pull on that thread further, it doesn't really give you a reason to think that Congress meant for visual depiction to bear something other than its plain meaning, or that the Sentencing Commission meant that. What it shows is that what the Sentencing Commission and Congress wanted was for visual depiction to bear its plain meaning, as broad as that is. And we see that in the application notes to 2G1.3, where the Sentencing Commission says very clearly, this guideline is meant to be construed very broadly, which I think gives us that extra impetus to read this visual depiction term to be as broad as its, you know, plain meaning requires. Now, I'd also like
to- In this case, do we have to decide that particular issue, the narrow issue, if we find that the evidence shows that Gould intended to record his encounter with the child, if possible?
I think you're right, Judge Donald. The court does not have to decide this issue because the facts in the record are very clear that Mr. Gould actually did intend to do a video recording of this live in-person sexual encounter that he had planned with the girl. However, we would ask, we do think that we would certainly defer to the court's discretion as to what it thinks is the best way to resolve this case. Mm-hmm. But we would urge the court to address the visual depiction issue simply because it has been fully briefed by the parties, was fully addressed below, and is an issue on which, you know, reasonable minds have some disagreement, and we think litigants could benefit from guidance from this court.
And if we did that other route, would that mean that we'd have to decide that a one-on-one communication qualifies as seeking by notice or advertisement? It's not entirely clear that what the correct answer to that is, because of it seems to me that there is a circuit split on what, at least in the statutory context, what make notice means. The 11th Circuit seems to suggest it requires a broad dissemination. Your argument here, of course, is that just any type of notice, including a text exchange, would qualify. But I'm not certain that that argument would be correct in the 11th Circuit. So we'd kind of be entering somewhat of a circuit split if we adopted it.
And I think the court would be entering a circuit split. We think it would be beneficial to provide guidance to litigants in the Sixth Circuit as to this issue. And we think that the vast majority of the circuits are correct. The four circuits that have said that notice that notice encompasses one-to-one communications, we think that's correct. I think the 11th Circuit decision is really undercut for several reasons. One, its own analysis is not particularly persuasive. It says, well, it recognizes that some definitions of notice do not have a public component, and then says, well, some do, and that makes it ambiguous. But that doesn't make it ambiguous. It just means that notice is a capacious term. It includes, you know, public notices as well as private notices. So that doesn't render any ambiguity to the term notice.
Why would they? I guess the concern I have is if you say offering or seeking by notice or advertisement, if you say any communication is a notice, why would you add the by notice or advertisement? What is that doing independent of the offering or seeking? The offering or both of them would require some type of, you know, communication, I would think.
Yeah, I think the reason you see that language is because it tracks some statutory language, other offenses where Congress has used by notice or advertisement. And I think the Sentencing Commission was trying to track that language. But I think if you look at the those terms, notice is broad. And I think you look again at the application notes, they indicate the Sentencing Commission intended this to be read very broadly. They intended it to be read to include notice, advertisement, or any other method. They intended this word notice to be read very broadly. And we think it has broad connotations. We don't think that the 11th Circuit's decision is persuasive. We think it's actually undermined by the 11th Circuit's prior decision in the Caniff case, the Caniff 1 decision, which we cited in our 28J letter, that I think very persuasively points out why notice is a very broad term. The other thing I would point out about the Caniff case is that one of the reasons that the court reached the decision it did is because of the linguistic structure of 2251D1, which uses words like makes, prints, or publishes. And so they thought that the prints and publishes, which imply a public component, that public component should be read into makes. We don't have similar verbs here in the guideline that we're looking at. Offering or seeking is commonly done in both private ways and in public ways. And so I think it's certainly a natural fit to read the language here as including a one-to-one communication. And I think that I'd also like to, we would actually urge the court to address this issue and find that notice encompasses one-to-one communications as pretty much every other circuit with the possible exception of the 11th. And I say possible exception there because even after Caniff 2, the 11th Circuit has applied 2251D1 to situations where there has been a one-to-one communication. If you look at the Orr case, which we cited in our 28J letter, the 11th Circuit appears to not have followed Caniff itself. So I think that decision does not have very much persuasive value. With regard to the relevant conduct argument that Mr. Rossman presented, I would just point out that it is our position. We believe that the placing of the advertisement was in fact relevant conduct here. Because when you look at 1B1.3, even under A1, which we can see that's the provision that qualifies here, it allows for when there's jointly undertaking criminal activity, the conduct of others of that jointly undertaking criminal activity. And here there was clearly jointly undertaking criminal activity. There was an offer, there was an acceptance. Mr. Rossman says, well, that advertisement was placed before he accepted. But at the time he accepted, at the time he sent his email communication back, that advertisement was still working, right? That advertisement was still out there. It's not like, you know, the offerer had ceased making the offer. The offer was still active. And so we think at the moment that this jointly undertaking criminal activity occurred, this advertisement was there. And so this offense, the offense itself did involve offering by advertisement. It also involved seeking by advertisement. So we would urge the court to find that this the conduct in this case fits squarely within the contours of 2G 1.3 C1. I'd also like to just briefly respond to the argument the defendant made about, the purpose here that 2G 2.1, this cross-reference is meant to get us to 2G 2.1, and 2G 2.1 is really about, it's only really about production, and that live things can't be produced. That's simply not true. I mean, there's the example that Judge Donald gave. You have live productions on Broadway. Those are produced. During this pandemic, many gyms have resorted to presenting live sessions, live training sessions that are never recorded, where people go on Zoom and they do live training with fitness trainers. Nobody would say that they haven't produced a valuable product there. People are paying for that product. They produced a live video transmission that is a product. Also, the guideline itself, 2G 2.1, is all about sexually exploiting a minor by production of sexually explicit visual or printed material. The focus is not on the permanence of the production. The focus is on the sexual exploitation of children. That's why we care about this stuff. And live visual depictions are just as bad in terms of sexual exploitation of children. In fact, they're even worse, because what happens in a live video transmission is that the person on the receiving end can also direct and control the actions of the minor. And so they're actually directly participating in the abuse. For the reasons, unless there are any other questions, for the reasons that we set forth in our brief, we would ask this court to affirm the defendant's sentence.
Okay, so just a couple of quick questions, and then I'll ask my colleagues if they have any further questions. First of all, is there any pending issue on the toddler enhancement on 2G2.1 before?
No, there's no pending issue on that. I mean, okay. As far as I understand, they have not raised that on appeal, so they've waived that argument.
Okay. And secondly, I think you've already touched on this, but just for my own clarification, how do you respond to Gould's Havis argument that 2G1.3A's application note 5A impermissibly expands the cross-reference by use of the quote or other method? I think you've touched on that, but I just want to have you come back to that briefly.
Well, I think there are two responses. I think the fundamental point of Havis was that you can't have commentary that expands the guidelines beyond what the text can support. But that doesn't mean you can't have commentary that affirms that broad language should be read broadly. And that's what our position is that the guideline itself uses broad language. It uses a broad term involved. It also uses a very broad term notice. And what the commentary simply does is confirm that the Sentencing Commission meant for those broad terms to be construed broadly. And that's what we're asking the court to do here.
Okay. Judge Guy, any further questions?
Well, it's more of an observation than a question. And I can understand how you would like a resolution of all these questions, but there's also a train of thought that out there that says, let the promulgator of the language, be it Congress or the Sentence Commission, clean up their own ambiguities, because courts doing it just encourages further sloppiness of draftsmanship and whatnot. So it isn't just, we don't necessarily resolve this. We're not the Supreme Court. In fact, we may be creating a circuit split on some of these issues.
Well, Judge Guy, I certainly appreciate that concern, and I can let you know that this is an issue that we, on behalf of the department, are looking at potentially putting on the list of things that we recommend for the Sentencing Commission to clarify. As I pointed out to you, I believe that the discrepancy between 2G 2.2 and 2G 1.3 cross-references, they were always meant to be the same. And I think the discrepancy simply resulted from an oversight when the commission was trying to amend the guidelines to correspond to the PROTECT Act. They just focused solely on the child pornography guidelines and neglected to amend other cross-references that referred to those guidelines.
I tend to agree with you, but the argument that what somebody else intended gets to be a slippery slope. if you substitute your view for what they intended.
Well, I think the issue here, though, is, again, if you go to the plain meaning of the term, the plain meaning of the term is broad enough to encompass what we are saying it should encompass. And so the question of it, the reason why intent arises as a question is do we have any indication? We really need a strong indication that the Sentencing Commission intended for this language to mean something contrary to its plain meaning, because our default rule is we interpret guidelines according to their plain meaning. And here, the reason we focused on the intent is just simply to point out that when you pull on that thread, it doesn't reveal an intent for visual depiction to have something other than its plain meaning. But what it does reveal is for visual depiction to be as broad as its plain meaning would require.
Thank you. Judge Murphy, anything further?
No other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLaurin. Mr. Rossman, your rebuttal.
Thank you. The first point to address under the visual depiction issue is that the government argues that there was an oversight in not including live visual transmission in 2G1.3C, and that this issue should be addressed by the Sentencing Commission because there's essentially a hole in the structure of the guidelines. But I think that argument is not correct, because if you look at what the structure of the guidelines is, 2G2.2 and 2G2.1 are addressing the production or the possession, receipt of child pornography. And 2G1.3C is addressing child sexual exploitation, which are two different things. Now, why do we have the cross-reference? If you do something that looks like child exploitation and it more closely resembles the production of child pornography, then you should go from 2G1.3 to 2G2.1. And sending out a live transmission of abuse that's not recorded, that is never stored in permanent format, more closely resembles child exploitation than it does production of child pornography. And there are differences in the victimization of the victims. Victims continue to be humiliated and re-victimized when child pornography circulates, but if it's never recorded in a permanent format, it never circulates, there's a different degree of victimization. So that distinction, that omission from 2G1.3 was not an oversight. It was intentional, it's structural, and it should be given effect. Now, there's also a habeas issue in 2G1.3C1 with respect to visual depiction. The application note says that any visual depiction counts, and it talks about broad application of the guideline. And of course, the language of 2G1.3C1 does not include the word any. The word any is important because in some of the 2251 cases, they rely on the presence of the term any in visual depiction to argue that it covers certain conduct. And so our argument would be that under Havis, the guideline application note 5A would expand the meaning if it were interpreted so expansively. Now, we talked a little bit about the notice or advertisement issue and the one-on-one communication. Why should a one-on-one communication count as a notice or advertisement? Of course, our position is that it should not. And really the purpose of this guideline, when you look at it, it is to punish people more harshly who are putting communications out there for others to find concerning the exploitation of children. And so one-on-one communications would certainly not be included in that. When you look at the Caniff case from the 11th Circuit that we've been discussing, they talk about how an advertisement has to be public or commercial, and an email is neither of those things. Similarly, a notice, and I see my time is up if I may finish.
You may finish your statement.
A notice is something that would be put out there for the public. So if I email my friend and I say, what are your plans for Derby weekend? I'm not seeking by notice or advertisement to find out what his Derby weekend plans are. It's a one-on-one communication, which is different.
Okay, anything, any other questions, Judge Guy, Judge Murphy?
No. Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. The matter is now submitted.